everyone. I'm Hannah Shepherd, and welcome to the Freed Up Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about everyone's favorite topic, debt. Okay, now don't run away. I know that you probably were like, I'm turning this off. I'm never listening to this again. I want you to stay with me. We actually have a great episode planned today. But before we hop into that, let's hear a quick recap of where we are.
A financially and spiritually wise person will be a cautious debtor. Debt is not inherently evil, but debt is inherently dangerous. There is an efficient way to go about debt, and there is an inefficient way to go about debt. And most of us are filled with shame surrounding our debt levels, surrounding our credit cards, surrounding our payment schedules. Maybe lack of wisdom, lack of restraint, or lack of resources got us to where we are right now. We need to understand how to get out of the danger zone, but also see that debt can actually be a tool. There is an appropriate place for it in some situations, but it requires wisdom. Debt is often driven by false beliefs that we have. It loads us down with shame, but instead, we need to look at debt the way the scriptures tell us to look about debt and to become wise in the process.
Joining me today is expert James Linhoff. Man, he has been in this financial advisor planning role for 21 years, and I'm excited to talk to him today about a topic that I think scares a lot of us, most of us. It's debt. And if you've been listening to anything around Freed Up, you maybe have heard the term inefficient or efficient debt. So to kick us off today, I know that most folks are going to be starting from a place, if they're anything like me, if they've heard anything in the financial world, they've heard the debt is bad. That's what they heard. They said, never have it. You need to get rid of it as soon as you can. It's evil. However they say it, that's the consensus, is that it's terrible. Never get it. And then at the same time, it's virtually impossible to navigate some of the basic parts of the modern world without dealing with debt. You know, you think about things like college or buying a house. Those are technically debt. So,
oh yeah,
what right. do I do? Kick us off.
Hannah, you're absolutely right. The stigma out there, the traditional teaching is that debt is the problem. Debt is the enemy. Debt is evil. And I actually think that's the problem. That teaching that makes debt the enemy causes people to make really bad decisions, to do things that don't make any financial sense, because they're just so passionate about eliminating the enemy, right? Getting back at the devil of debt. The problem is that debt is not the problem. We are. Mm-hmm. We're the problem. Debt is always just the outflow of our decision making. It's the symptom. It's not the problem. It's neutral. And what we need to start to recognize is that debt comes in two forms, and they're not good or bad. They're just efficient versus inefficient. And that by itself starts to take that stigma away, where it's not the enemy. It's not the thing we need to hate and blame for all of our problems. It's just a simple question of, is this thing helping me? Is it efficient? Is it helping my net worth grow over time? Or is it actually working against me? It's becoming more and more of a burden of interest that I can't keep up with, and it's becoming inefficient for me to finance things that way. When we start to talk in those terms, we can start to have more, I think, emotionally mature conversations about debt instead of just blaming it and making it the boogeyman.
That's good. So maybe some of our listeners aren't as familiar with what you mean when you say efficient versus inefficient debt. Now, I'm a positive person, so I want you to start with the positive one. At least it sounds positive because it's efficient. I like to be efficient. Talk to us about efficient debt.
Yep. Yeah. So efficient debt is debt that is used to purchase something that is growing in value. So if I use a mortgage to buy a home, and the reasonable expectation is that home is going to appreciate in value, the fact that I am borrowing at 3% to buy something that's appreciating at 5%, that's efficient. That's reasonable. It's not magical. Now, I don't want people to run out and buy as big a house as they can afford because I said debt is efficient. And it is. It's not going to make you wealthy. it's just by itself not a bad thing. It's not inefficient. So when we use debt to finance things that are growing in value, that's efficient. If we're using debt to give us access to things that make our life actually doable. So when I think about things like buying a car, the car itself is going to depreciate in value. So that's technically not efficient. But if buying a car that actually runs reliably is what allows me to do my job and get a paycheck, mm-hmm. it's not a bad use of resources. If it's the difference between me breaking down on the side of the road and losing my income, I'll take the debt if that's my only avenue to get access to that income. School loans, and we'll talk more about this for sure, but I do think school loans are efficient if they are aimed at something that is going to create a higher outcome, a higher income for you. The problem is that the most incredibly well-worded lie in the history of finance is that people who go to college make more money.
Mm.
That's actually not true.
No.
Statistically speaking, people who graduate from college can find their way to a path of income that does tend to be a little bit higher. That's fair. But what we see a lot of times are people going to college, not finishing, and then just dragging a bunch of student loans around with them for the rest of their life, making the same amount of money they would have made if they never went in the first place.
Wow.
It needs to be aimed at something that's buying you a career of higher income. If it's not, then it's not efficient. So there's no – even in situations where technically you could say that debt could be efficient, it could also actually be inefficient if you're using it in the wrong way.
That's good. So talk to me about the flip side of that. What's our inefficient debt, and what does that look like?
Yeah, the epitome of inefficient debt would be credit cards, right?
Yeah.
If you are using credit cards to finance particularly consumables like groceries or tech gadgets or things that you know for sure you're going to use up or throw away, clothing, you are financing consumption. And so by definition, all of those things you bought are worthless. So they don't grow in value. They go to zero. And you're paying 18, 20, 25% interest for those things that now are worth nothing. It's a disaster. So it is deeply inefficient. It doesn't mean that people shouldn't have credit cards. I actually think credit cards are fine. There's nothing wrong with them. You've just got to use them correctly. If you continually build up financing things that you've long since used and thrown away, you're really creating a hole that's hard to dig out of. But if you're using it, even if you finance for a short term, something that actually is moving you in the right direction, doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It's still inefficient because it's still costing you a lot, but it doesn't mean it's a bad decision.
Yeah.
We just need to neutralize that and take the stigma away so we can evaluate it more reasonably.
So maybe if someone's on, they're like, man, I fall into that inefficient category. They might be feeling a little down on yourself. Man, do not check out right now. Don't turn this off. Stay with us. And here's why. Because my next question actually has to do with a lot less about rules. From what I hear you saying, James, it sounds like there's quite a bit of wisdom that goes into play when you are thinking about how you should get debt. Can you just touch on that for just a moment, especially for the person who wants to check out right now?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the choice to take on debt does need to carry a lot of weight. I think because it's so freely available, we are getting inundated with options to take out a new card or get a new personal loan or whatever. We are constantly invited to recklessly pile ourselves with more debt, and we tend to think, well, as long as I can afford the payments, I'm fine.
Mm.
So when we think about that decision to take on debt, the biggest question we need to be asking is this something that's going to move me forward? Or is it only something that's going to make me feel better, make me look better, make me have a higher status with my friends? Like, what am I actually buying with this money I don't have?
That's good.
Because if what I'm buying is about me feeling better about myself, it's not a good use of debt. But if what I'm buying is going to move me in a direction that actually continues to grow me financially, continues to push me forward, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. We just need to think in those terms. And a lot of times we don't have to think in those terms, because we can get 0% for 6 months. We can, you know, finance things really easily, and it's only $50 a month. But when you stack 50 on top of 50 on top of 100 on top of 400, pretty quickly your cash flow gets chewed up in paying for things that are already out of date.
That's great.
Already wasted, right? And so we got to just take it much more intentionally as we approach it.
To that point, why do you think it's so easy for us to rationalize debt? Why do you think it's so simple? And don't get me wrong, I'm not naive. I know that there's a ton of people who get a big paycheck when I say, yeah, I'll take on that $1,700 credit card increase, right?
Giant industry.
They are excited when I do that. Yes. But them aside, why do you think that we as consumers, and keep in mind, we're talking to people who probably walk with Jesus.
Yeah.
Why are we able to really rationalize debt, especially the debt that is inefficient?
Yeah. What marketing agencies have figured out a long time ago is that all of our decisions are emotional. We keep thinking that they're mathematical. And if we keep expecting people to make decisions mathematically, we will continue to be disappointed. All of our decisions are emotional. So when we hear from the marketing companies, you deserve this. You've earned it. This is what everybody else has. This is just basic. Everybody deserves to have this type of cell phone, or everybody deserves to drive this type of car. We start to buy into that emotional construct that says, this is just my right. My entitlement as a human is that I get to enjoy these things. I deserve it. I work hard. I mean, think of all the messages that they pound you with. And then on the side, they'll say, and if you can't afford it, that's okay. We'll make it super easy. Just, you know, 20,000 monthly payments of, you know, $50 a month. You know, like, it's no big deal. It's right. Easy. And so they make it feel painless, and they tie that emotion that says you deserve it. So we have a really hard time escaping that trap. And then we can also make the argument that everybody else has debt too, right?
Yeah.
It's such a common thing that it just doesn't have the stigma that would prevent us or even give us a second thought, right? Be like, well, yeah, everybody's got credit card debt. It's no big deal.
Right.
Let's take on a little bit more. And then you find yourself spiraling into just more and more of that inefficiency.
That's so good, James. But you know what? When I hear it, I'm going to just push back on you a little
bit. Yeah, please.
When I hear it, I'm like, oh, well, that makes it easy to make it sound a little evil.
Yeah.
Since I know you have gotten to spend a little time with you, I know that you have a soapbox about how debt shouldn't be called evil. I want you to get on that soapbox for just a little bit, because most of our listeners have only heard one version, right? They've heard the version that you just said, which is tied to emotion. So how could debt be bad? Everyone has it. Or they've heard the version, debt is death, you know, and debt is evil, and don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And they've not ever been able to make a conscious or even wise choice for themselves. So I want you to go into that just a little bit, and maybe even share a story or two, if you can, about some folks who could have had an opportunity to maybe practice more efficient debt, or some folks who just didn't do anything and practice only inefficient debt, whatever that looks like for you. Just share with us.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think the biggest thing that happens is, because inefficient debt can be painful and it can create these tailspins where people are chasing 25% interest that they can't get ahead of, that we want to say that that debt is evil. And I get that the feeling that that creates, that burden that it creates, is negative. And so we just say that it's the problem. It is neutral. You signed the credit card agreement to say, I am willing to pay 25% interest when I buy whatever the stuff is that I'm going to buy. We were the ones that consciously chose those things. And because that inefficient debt carries with it a lot of extra, you know, unnecessary cost, we then say that all debt of all kinds is evil.
Yeah.
None of it is evil. Because when you say it's all evil, you'll do things like what I've seen over and over again, where people will come to my office and they'll say, okay, great, we're ready to finally start saving for retirement. We know that debt is evil. We know that everything about us is supposed to be focused on getting rid of all of our debt because it's so terrible for us. So we spent all of our money paying off our house. And now, at the age of 48, we're ready to start saving for retirement. And I'm the one then that has to look them in the face and say, you're ruined. Your obsession over paying your 3% mortgage off is your downfall. It will be the thing that destroys you. Because while you were so focused on paying off your 3% mortgage completely unnecessarily, the stock market quadrupled. And I can't make it do that again. And you missed it. You saved nothing into your 401k, nothing into these other avenues that would build those resources. you could have used that debt as leverage. Borrow at 3%, and instead of overwhelming your cash flow to try to pay it off, save that money somewhere else, build up your net worth. You would be so much better off. But because you're so anti-debt, you're actually going to find yourself destitute. Yeah. All you're going to have is a house. And you can't pull a shingle off and go buy milk with it. You can't, you know, use those resources unless you go back to the bank and borrow the money back out from it again. Right. And so it's just devastating what it leads to. And people take that all-inclusive, all-debt-is-evil kind of position. They really create terrible outcomes financially.
That's great. So then this is probably one of the last questions before we get to wrap up here. You know, it sounds good on paper. It really does. Debt, efficient, inefficient. What do we do with the stuff that really doesn't fit neatly into a category? Talk about some of that.
I think the biggest thing is recognizing that we will need to pay this off at some point, right? So one of the things about debt is that you can continually perpetuate it. You can roll your car that you just finished paying off into a new car because now you can afford the payment again, right? So if you keep thinking about debt in terms of cash flow, you're never going to get ahead. You can always afford more debt cash flow-wise than you should get from a net worth standpoint. You can always leverage yourself up because debt is really freely available in this culture. It doesn't mean it's a good idea. And so when you are in that position of, I just finished paying off my car, think about, how do I get to a place where I never finance a car again? Hmm. Or if I do finance it, it's simply because it's efficient, right? I'm okay with people if they have a bunch of money that they've saved up to buy their next car, and then they go to buy the car and they find out that the financing is 0.9%. They're like, I'll just finance it. Yeah, high five. Good on you. I don't care. But you've done the work to be ready so that the next time around you can choose whether you're going to use financing or not. Most of the time when we make a purchase decision, financing it is the only option. Mm-hmm. And we got to get out of that spiral because you just keep adding more financing. So if we can get to a place where cars, things like student loans, things that are in that nebulous area where they can be really inefficient if you do them over and over and over again, and you just keep spending money on payments rather than just owning the thing. Those are things we need to at some point set a stop date. Say, once I pay this car off, I'm not going to do another car loan until I have the money saved up, because I can drive this car for 6 more years. So I could save up the money and then choose whether I want to finance it or not. But it's only because of the efficiency decision rather than I just want a new car. I want the new car smell. And I just finished with my payment so I can afford it again. That's the cycle that we got to break. The other thing is when it comes to things like 12 months same as cash, 6 months same as cash, where you can say, well, I can buy this thing and it's basically free. I don't have to pay any interest. Recognize that those contracts are designed to trick you into paying a boatload of interest because they're all retroactive. So you're only going to use that kind of financing if you already have the money. You are not going to put yourself in a position where you plan that someday in the future, I'll have this money that I don't have right now. Because my first question to people that say that is, why? Why would 6 months from now you suddenly have $3,000 extra that you don't have today? What is going to change between now and 6 months from now? And they're like, well,
maybe the lottery.
Yeah, maybe I'll win the lottery. Maybe I'll get a raise. Maybe. Then you can't do it. You've got to be in a position where you have the resources and you're just choosing to use financing rather than being where I'm basically convincing myself that this is efficient because it's free. And then when I get to the end of that 6 months, I'm just going to get my head kicked in with interest.
That's great. Man, you've been sharing with us some really, really fantastic stuff. I think we have a little bit more time left. So I just want to ask one final question. There is some talk, or maybe there are some people who have questions about the possibility of negotiating down debt.
Yeah.
How do you even get into that? How do you get debt canceled or reduced? What does that look like?
It is a really messy environment out there. There's a whole industry that's built up around creating debt counseling, credit counseling, where they'll negotiate with the lenders to give you one single payment if you've got 12 or 15 different cards or whatever, and they'll consolidate all that down and give you one smaller payment. What's happening is they're going to the lending institutions and they're saying, look, you're not going to get any of this money. This person's going to file bankruptcy. This person's not going to be able to afford it. So what will you be willing to take? And they'll reduce the interest that's accrued. They'll take some of the late fees and penalties and stuff. They'll reduce the balance owed. And then that credit counseling agency will turn to you and say, look what we did. We dropped your overall balance owed by this much. Aren't we amazing? And to some degree, yeah, that's helpful. But then they marry you to a payment where if you miss it, you are in trouble. There's just very little flexibility. And so, one, don't get yourself there. If you can avoid it at all costs, just do not use debt recklessly to the point where you're in that position. But if you are in that position, start with trying to do some of that yourself. Call the credit companies yourself and see what you can do to try to work that down. They will work with you. Not all of them are going to be easy. Some of them will be. But then the goal is to start to move towards I personally am a fan of a cash flow model for debt reduction, meaning we want to pay off the balances that are lowest to get that cash flow that would otherwise go there, and then we're going to go to the next one and the next one and the next one. The debt snowball is the common language for that. And that is absolutely, in my opinion, the right way to do it because we need cash flow wins. And so if you can negotiate with your lower balance, they're probably going to be like, yeah, whatever, we don't care, it's not that much. They'll negotiate down, you can knock it out quicker, move to the next one, have the next negotiation. Don't try to negotiate all of your credit cards at the same time because you can't manage all of those at the same time. So you just kind of move one to the next. I don't want people to hear that credit counseling or credit agencies are a bad idea. I just want them to really understand what they're getting into and make sure that you are fully confident you're going to be able to make those payments because they are more damaging if you miss them than credit cards are. They just have way more flexibility. Credit cards, you can pay the minimum, which is a joke, right? You can always move things around while you have them, while they're not consolidated. But once you consolidate them, you're married to that payment.
Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to throw out is there are a lot of options for debt consolidation that people don't consider. Things like rolling your credit cards into a personal loan, rolling them into a home equity line of credit. When we can just take a debt payment and reduce it down because our interest goes from 15, 18, 25% down to 5 or even 10, we'll make progress quicker. A lot of times those loans are also amortized, which means they have a payment that is moving you towards zero. Most of those credit card companies are out there just hoping you never pay the thing off, right? They'll just let you continue to pay them interest in perpetuity. So moving to some of those is a good idea. But what I see a lot of times is that people will say, oh, great, shoo, I rolled all that up into my home equity line. Now I'm only paying 3% interest on it. It's super easy. Now I can go rack credit card debt right back up.
Get some more.
And live the way I used to live. Like, I want people to think of that as a one-time, you pull that string, there is no going back. You don't get to do that over and over again. So if you pull that string, which may be the right string to pull, you've got to make sure there's behavior change in why you're spending the money. What is the emotion you're medicating? What are the things you're trying to buy with this debt to make yourself feel better about yourself, to make yourself feel more significant? Whatever it is, find out why you're doing it and make sure that that's going to change before you pull that string, because otherwise you're going to keep doing it. That's the problem I have with debt.
Man, James, I didn't know we were going to be coming to counseling today. You're talking about behavior changes and feeding emotions. Man, I need you to unpack that because I know that you're right. To your earlier point about marketers really capitalizing on emotion, it's not just them. We, too, are buying things to feed emotion. Hit on that. Hit on that from your – this is everyone, our listeners. This is not a counselor, though, but this is a financial planner who knows this piece. And so if this hits home with you, man, it sounds like it's a good next step. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I say all the time, we keep treating this thing like it's a math problem. I've never met anyone who's outliving their resources, who's spending money they don't have because they can't do arithmetic. This isn't a math problem. It's an emotion problem. They feel like a failure. They feel insignificant. They feel like they aren't adequate, and they are using money they don't have to medicate that feeling. We keep scolding them, we as a financial industry. We keep scolding them. We keep treating them to some degree like children, like you should never, ever, ever do that. you're a bad boy, you're a bad girl, and we give them shame and guilt over it, and we try to will them into stopping. Just stop spending money. And you think of it like sin management. Just stop doing
right.
it. How?
Right.
If I knew how to stop, I'd have stopped already, right? People recognize that going into this inefficient credit card debt is hurting them, but they don't know how to stop it. And so we need to be more emotionally aware of what we're feeling that's creating that urge to medicate it. Are you feeling like a failure? Are you feeling insignificant? Are you wrapped up in this status race where you've got to keep up with your friends in order to feel like you're part of that group? What is it? Do the work to dig into why you're spending money you don't have. Because until you find out how to fill that void without spending money, you're going to keep spending money. That void doesn't go away just because you paid off your credit card debt for a season. That's why I see people go through these processes. They go through these small groups on finance, and they'll spend that 6 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever just raging at debt and kicking butt and taking all that down. And then 6-12 months later, they're back to where they were because it was never about the debt.
Mm.
It's always about their emotion, and they're trying to feel better. And
you
I
know,
get it.
James, to that point, when you talk about how emotion can lead you to spending, emotion can also kind of lead you to an ungodly hoarding.
Yes.
Where you never spend, where
right.
you are always in a scarcity mindset. Is there yeah. anything you'd like to hit on with that?
Yeah, that is the other side of the debt equation, right? Is people who are so afraid, they're so fearful of taking on debt, either because they've got the perception that it's terrible, they should never have it, or they, you know, have kind of accumulated to the point where they have no need for it. They feel insulated from it, and then they miss opportunities. You know, I think of business owners who are not taking opportunities to expand, to grow, because they don't want to take on a business loan that's, you know, 2%, something incredibly, it's like free money, man.
Right.
You could employ 200 or 300 more people if you were willing to step out of that fear, get out of the emotional trap that I'm not allowed to have debt or I'm too successful to have debt. And in order for me to expand, I'd have to take on debt. Yeah, go do it. Go grow this thing. Again, back to this whole idea of stewardship, there is an expectation of expansion, of multiplication. That's part of the equation. Debt can be a really cool way for that expansion to happen. If it's efficient, do it. If taking on a small business loan gets you to a place where you are impacting, you know, several hundred more families in this city, I actually think it's an obligation for us to continue to grow in that direction and make those impacts that are available to us. If it's efficient and it's wise, take action. Don't be afraid of it. But we cut it off and we say it's not allowed. It's not Christian of us to have debt.
Thanks so much for joining us today. This is actually our last episode, and I know that might be sad, or maybe you're relieved. I don't know, but either way, I hope that this has been helpful, and my bigger hope is that it's actually been freeing, because our goal from the start was not to just give you another financial program that gives you more rules to follow, more things to do, that makes you feel bad about yourself. Our goal was to create this podcast and to create the entire Freed Up experience to help you move closer to spiritual and financial freedom. I hope that you found that by listening. Thanks for joining us.